You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
What is up, Fighting Universe? Jose Youngs here with MMAfighting.com with another episode of the A-Side. We've been teasing this all morning, and I'm really excited to bring in my co-host, UFC Hall of Famer Uriah Faber. Recently came back, had a big knockout win over Ricky Simon at UFC Sacramento. Uriah, welcome to the A-Side.
Thanks, brother. Thanks for having me.
And this is live, of course, so people can tune in. And if you do have questions for myself, or obviously you have questions for Uriah, you can use hashtag the A-Side or leave a comment in the comment section on the channel. But I've already looked through. There are a lot of questions, obviously, because this is a Hall of Famer is a co-host. So I've narrowed it down to a few specifically for Uriah. But we're going to jump right into the questions. The first one from Eduardo Bueno. Mr. Faber, what's next for Cody Garbrandt and Sage? Are they coming back soon? Also, did the UFC contact you about what's next after the Simone bout? Cheers.
You know, UFC didn't contact me about what's next after the Simone fight. Dana and I went back and forth just on text message, messing around, talking crap to each other. And he congratulated me, and we just chit-chatted, but not about the future necessarily. As far as Sage and Cody goes, Cody is about healed up. Sage has little ways to go. Sage can't work out right now because of the surgery he had. His face is still healing. I mean, you can't really tell. He looks fine, but there's just a bunch of stuff that needs to be healed in there. So he's waiting for now. And Cody's been looking good in practice. He's been in as of late, especially. He's all healed up. He had a wrist injury that was bugging him, and so now he's back in the mix. And I'm not sure what's up next for him. He said, "Whatever it takes, whoever is standing in the way of getting him his belt." That's what he said.
Does he have a fight card in mind? I know they have that big UFC San Francisco card. I'm sure he'd rather fight in the NorCal area.
I think you know, Cody likes to go big. I think Madison Square Garden would be a good one. You know, he always likes the biggest opportunities, and so you know, that one's a little ways off, but I think, you know, he should be ready.
Right on, right on. Well, we're gonna move on from another person that leaves many a comment every episode, but life is kicking my butt. Mr. Faber, given that a single eye poke could render a fighter crippled for life via nail, cut, puncture, etc., do you think MMA promotions and or athletic commissions should enforce a rule that nails must be cut smooth before an MMA bout with open gloves? I'd love to hear your thoughts.
They actually do. They check your nails. They check your nails before every fight. That's like the last thing they do. They check your mouthpiece, your cup, and they feel your nails. Like when you see a referee right before you walk in the octagon, grab your hands, they are checking your nails. So it is a rule, and the best officials always do it.
So moving on, I think this is another question I think you'll have a lot of thoughts on from Milo of Croton or Cry. And I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. He asked a lot of questions, but hi guys, is Cejudo versus Amanda Nunes one of the biggest fights the UFC could possibly put on? And would the novelty of a male versus female cage fight make it the biggest fight in UFC history? Thanks. I mean, this obviously isn't going to happen, but what do you think about all of these hypothetical situations about Henry Cejudo, man, you've had some words with on Twitter and possibly fighting UFC bantamweight champion Amanda Nunes?
I doubt a Nunes would mind. You know, she's kind of a gangster. And I mean, there are some differences in men and women. That's why they don't usually compete together. But, you know, if anyone were the one that would do it, I bet Amanda could hang. Now, Cejudo is a very rare animal, Olympic gold medalist, two-time division champion as well. So, definitely Henry would be the favorite, but Amanda doesn't strike me as the type of person that would back down from a Henry Cejudo.
So what did you make of, I think the last time we heard a lot of this male versus female comparison was when Ronda was running through the division and everyone wanted her to fight either. They wanted her to fight Floyd Mayweather or they wanted her to fight another bantamweight. So as a fighter, when you hear all these fans calling for this, what goes through your head?
Well, you know, first off, you want to get some negative press for our sport, have guys and girls beating each other up. That's what I thought first and foremost. And then secondly, you know, I wouldn't want to mess with a girl. Girls can definitely beat up guys. It's no question. Girls are the toughest people on the planet, birthing children and putting up with all the crap they put up with from us jerks. I wouldn't want to mess with a chick. We're way outmatched.
Especially Amanda Nunes, who's head kicking everybody. But moving on. We have a lot of questions coming through. From Zaku Kokegi, Uriah, training versus parenting. What is it like training at a high class level and also being a parent to a newborn? Congrats on the great comeback. Hope to see you soon.
You know, training's definitely a different kind of animal than parenting. I haven't gotten to the real tough part yet. Our baby's been super easy as far as the sleeping goes. So that was the big worry. You know, training at the highest level is super demanding. You're getting beat up. You're having to train when you don't want to. You're always a little bit injured. You're hungry. You're sore all the time. You know, being a parent is demanding, absolutely, but it's kind of the same kind of thing. It's about passion. You have passion for the sport. That's why you do it. You have passion for the next generation and your little baby. So there are some similarities there. You know, they could pay me just to make a bunch of kids. I might do that, you know.
So you obviously, a lot of your teammates, Team Alpha Male guys, have had kids in the past. Cody, like TJ, has a kid. I believe Chad Mendez also had a kid. Did they tell you anything? Or when you're watching them go through this as new parenting experience, did that prepare you for when you had your child? Were you like, well, I've seen this play out enough times. I may not know firsthand what to expect, but you've seen it play out with your teammates.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you just see the level of joy and commitment it brings to the guys. And yeah, Danny Castillo just had his baby boy, and Chad had his girl, and Cody, of course. And, you know, we've got guys, Angelo Trevino and Joseph Morales, guys that started with me when they were little kids, who basically, you know, started the family before I did. So it was cool to see the progression with everyone having kids. And you know, you learn a little bit, but you don't really know until you're right in front of a baby and how you're going to feel and everything else. And it's been awesome.
Are you going to be one of the parents that allows their kids to go to fights? I know some fighters don't want their kids to go. Either A, it would be past their bedtime, or B, they wouldn't want see their kid watch them maybe fight another human being inside of an octagon.
I'll cross that bridge when we get there. I mean, we definitely didn't have her come to my fight at this time. I'm not against it necessarily. I'm not like for it. I haven't really thought about it, but I think our baby girl is going to be pretty exposed to the sport. She comes in and watches boxing and you know, boxing sparring in the gym, or you know, comes in and watches us roll jiu-jitsu. So, and when I'm at home watching fights, she'll be sitting there with me. So it's not going to be a strange thing for her. I think it'll be something that she's probably super used to. So maybe not.
Sure. Well, another technique question from our friend SJY. Flying knees. We saw another flying knee KO last night on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. Is the flying knee the technique du jour? Is the great equalizer to the double leg takedown? Could Dustin hit Habib with one and end Habib's reign as champ? Cheers. Thanks from SJY. So yes, a lot of flying knees are in the highlight reels lately. We famously saw Jorge Masvidal score that 5-second KO over Ben Askren. Could that be a possibility in the Dustin Habib fight? And is that really the great equalizer for the double up takedown, like our friend SJY is asking?
Well, flying knees have always been an awesome tool. I think, you know, properly set up takedowns is kind of the anti-flying knee. You know, we see a lot of guys getting desperate for a takedown. That's when you're in super danger of those kind of tools. Uppercuts, flying knees, up kicks, just a pure level change in general can help snuff a double leg. But Habib is getting good with his hands too, and he's got to be, you know, continually working on that, I would think. You saw him rock Connor when they fought, which was just a small part of the beating that he gave, but you know, I don't think Khabib's going to be just be fall into getting desperate for a takedown. He's going to be putting super pressure with his hands and just with his pace. And I predict that it won't be a flying knee that finishes that fight. You know, the sport has always seen the flying knees. It is a great tool against double legs, but a properly set up double leg or, you know, different attack might be the key to fight the flying knee.
Sure. And sticking with this theme of wrestlers, going into the Ben Askren, another question. Good afternoon, Jose, and good morning, Uriah, if you are in California. Rumor has it Ben Askren versus Damian Maia is being discussed. At first, I thought Damian was too low in the rankings for Ben to fight, but I'm not sure if a fight versus other top welterweights coming off losses like RDA or Wonderboy would be a good matchup for Ben stylistically. Do you think Damian Maia is the right fight for Ben Askren, and is this a must-win for both fighters?
Damian Maia is a super specialized guy when it comes to jiu-jitsu, and Askren's super, super specialized in wrestling. I think that would be, for me, that would be a really interesting matchup. I'd love to see that, and I don't think, you know, a guy like Maia has been around so long, anything that you give that guy, he's deserving of. I don't care about rankings or anything else. He's a warrior. He's put in his time. He's a guy that's earned every opportunity. So you know, you could put him against anyone in the world right now, and I wouldn't have a qualm with saying he's deserved it. So, yeah, I'd like to see that matchup. I think it'd be a good matchup also for Askren to get his head straight. I mean, you get rocked like you did. That's a jarring hit to the brain. I'd like to see him do a strategic matchup against two masters of the crafts. I'd love to see it, and I don't think the rankings has anything to do with that matchup.
Now, if that fight does happen and say it's a 5-round fight, who would you favor in a 5-round as opposed to a 3-round? The grappler, like you said, Damian Maia, or the elite level wrestler like Ben Askren?
You know, I've got to go back and watch Askren's fights and see his finishing moves. You know, I'm not sure how he's progressed as a jiu-jitsu player. I know he has a great jiu-jitsu instructor out there with Duke Rufus, Daniel Vanderlei. He's my boy, Big Dog, they call him. So I know he'll be prepared, absolutely. And you know, the wrestling is more of, you know, is more of a control thing. If Askren can find a way to do damage in that situation, that'd be the question. But you know, jiu-jitsu can either nullify wrestling or get wrestlers in trouble that haven't done their homework. So if Ben isn't taking it serious, I think there's a better chance of him getting caught than him catching Maia.
Right. And I mean, I just want to watch that fight as a stylistic matchup. I can't agree with you enough. But another interesting question from our friend Lodovic. I don't know if you watched the UFC San Antonio fights, but the Francisco Trinaldo versus Alexander Hernandez was a little controversial in the eyes of the fans. Alexander Hernandez got the decision win, but Francisco Trinaldo was very adamant that he won, and I think a lot of people agreed with him. So someone is asking how we scored the fight. I personally thought Francisco Trinaldo won, but part of the question is, but even more interesting to me is that Francisco Trinaldo asked the UFC to get his win bonus even though he lost. I wonder, does the UFC actually do that, paying a fighter his win bonus after a controversial decision? I think Shogun got his win money after his first fight against Machida, but I thought that was an exception. Any chance that Francisco Trinaldo could see this money? Also, thanks to Uriah for joining our community. We haven't seen that coming in a million years.
So, you're talking about the final fight in the Contender Series, right?
No, this was the UFC San Antonio. Francisco Trinaldo lost to Alexander Hernandez, and a lot of people believe Francisco Trinaldo won. And he's now asking for his win bonus, even though he didn't pick up the W. Basically, he's asking, is that something the UFC could possibly do, or have you heard anything like that happening?
You know, Dana is actually a really good guy, and he'll do that kind of stuff out of the kindness of his heart sometimes. You know, it's funny because you know, you have mixed reviews on Dana throughout the years, but somebody that's worked with him for a lot of years, I just know he's a real fair guy, And if he thinks something himself, he'll probably do it. Now, going and asking for it is a different animal. He doesn't like to be held up, that's for sure. So it'll all come. I didn't see the fight. I don't know how big of a ripoff it was. If it was like a blatant miscall, and Dana was like, man, I can't believe that. I thought so-and-so won. He'll probably end up hooking the guy up. Asking for it is not necessarily the best way with these guys from what I've seen. I've always, like, tried to ask for my guys to get the fight of the night bonus or everything else. It might backfire, actually. So, I bet he gets some sort of check in the mail. His win bonus, probably not his win bonus, but he'll probably get some sort of bonus. Dana's the type of dude that will reward a good fight and will reward guys that put it all out there.
So don't take to Twitter and ask for your win bonus is what you're saying.
Yes. Maybe have your manager mention it on the DL, but don't, because you know what's going to happen. This guy goes out and calls people, says it on social media. If he gets it, then he thanks Dana, whatever. Then you're going to have every guy that thinks he won a fight knocking on Dana's door and asking him for his money and then getting mad if he doesn't do it. It's like a little kindness can backfire sometimes. So, you know, do that stuff on the DL.
Right. Well, moving on, another question from our friend, Life is Kicking My Butt. This is a long-term bird's eye view question, but do you think there'll be any mergers between MMA promotions in the next 2 years? If you think yes, do you think any MMA promotions, which MMA promotions do you think will merge, or which ones do you think should merge? I think famously LFA was a merger, correct? Or I think it was like RFA and LFC kind of merged into LFA, but do you see any MMA promotions merging down the road?
It just kind of depends. You know, there's a lot of things going on politically with the Ali Act. If you guys don't know what that is, it's basically an act that went in, I think, early 2000s that made every boxing match a bidding war in some way, shape, or form, something to that tune. But I think it'll kind of depend on what happens in that regard, because I know that they've been fighting with the UFC for a lot of years on the Ali Act and that kind of, you know, stuff stops monopolies. You know, there was a time where UFC bought Pride, they brought WC, they bought Strikeforce, they bought like all these organizations and then either folded them up or promoted them for a little bit. So as far as mergers go, it's possible. I feel like World Series of Fighting that is now Professional Fighters League, PFL, has a really good relationship with the UFC. I don't know if they're merged or have this a good relationship. I know they're also on ESPN. So I wouldn't put it past some mergers happening or at least some cross promotions, but I don't know which organizations it would be.
Right. Well, I know Ryzen does a lot cross promotion, but I believe they've been on record saying they're more of a federation, but I know they want to work with KSW and they want to work with Bellator. I hear there's a rumor of them doing this big Bellator versus Ryzen card, maybe at the end of the year, where they do champion versus champion. Would you be interested in the UFC ever doing that? I know we spoke to KSW president Martin Lewandowski, and he doesn't see it ever happening, and Scott Coker doesn't see co-promotion with UFC ever happening. Not because they don't want to, but because they just said the UFC doesn't need. They just understand the UFC will probably say no.
Yeah, but you never know. You never can't count anything out when you're looking at the UFC. You know, Dana, although they have a massive company behind them, they've been bought and everything else, Dana still has a lot of leeway to make exciting things happen. And as you saw with Floyd, he's not afraid to make a buck and get outside the box. With the Floyd Connor fight. Also, if you look back to the Pride era, Dana took Chuck Liddell over and was like, all right, let's do this. And he had I think Dana was even in maybe in the corner, I can't remember, but he had him fight Alistair Overeem and a couple other guys over there in Pride. So you know, it's not out of the question in this day and age, in this climate, most likely not gonna happen, but you never say never in this sport. It's a crazy sport.
Yeah, I think that was the first loss to Rampage Jackson during. He entered one of the Grand Prix and Chuck lost. And they actually interviewed Dana White sitting ringside. And he was like, well, Chuck didn't stick to the game plan and this and that. So he was pretty embedded into that fight camp. But moving on. Right. We have a lot of questions coming in for you. Frankie, this seems for UFC 240 is obviously Saturday. So we should talk about that. Frankie Edgar. This seems like a horrible matchup for Frankie because of Max's reach. But what are the keys to victory for Frankie this weekend? And if he gets the win, do you think it's a crazy idea for him to either go down and fight Henry Cejudo, no offense, Uriah, or go back up to fight Habib? His wrestling could nullify the takedowns of Habib and Henry, making it a boxing match where I think he might have the advantage despite age and mileage. So Frank Edgar is fighting Saturday against Max Holloway in a fight that's been brewing for a long time here in Edmonton. Henry Cejudo's, he talks a lot about Frankie Edgar whenever we interview him. He doesn't bring up Max Holloway, but he brings up Frankie Edgar. So what are the keys for Frankie, and who would you like – should he go up or down if he does one?
Well, first off, Frankie's such a vet, man. I went up just because I was bored before I retired and went and fought him in the Philippines at 145 pounds, and we had a good fight. I think the key for Frankie is he needs to be elusive against Max. Max is a much bigger guy than Frankie. I know because I know Max outside of his fight camps, how big he gets, 180, you know, close to 190, I'll bet, as a 45-pounder at his heaviest, and he's got that Samoan blood. And he's also just an output machine. I mean, his output's crazy, and Frankie's kind of in the same boat. So Frankie has to strategically land some takedowns and then use some real control, which I think he can do. You know, he's a much more accomplished wrestler than Max. I'm not sure on the jiu-jitsu how they match up, but Frankie needs to do clinch work. He needs to be super fast and elusive on the outside. He needs to be all the way out or all the way in, because that boxing know-how of Max and high output along with the reach and the size are all going to be factors for him. So, I mean, he's definitely an underdog. I'd love to see Frankie get that, of course, because, you know, he's got such a history and he's such a tough kid. But at the end of the day, you know, time and abuse on the brain through training and fighting and everything else, I still think that's on the side of Max. You know, he's the younger, fresher guy. And if that were to happen, I think Cejudo wants to go up. I mean, Cejudo's a great matchup for Frankie, to be honest. That high-caliber wrestling, and he keeps a high pace. He can take a punch. And Cejudo wants to do big things. You know, he's being smart about this. If he could go get three, be the first ever, the youngest ever Olympic gold medalist, get two belts at 25, 35, then get up to 45. I mean, that's you couldn't ask for anything more. So I would say don't even let Frankie go down. Let, you know, make Henry go up, or let Henry go up, I should say.
Well, sticking to that theme, we had a question that came in. It says, please give your top three lineup possible matchups for Uriah. So I think they're asking, who would you like to see these fighters fight for their next fight? It's TJ, Dominic Cruz, and Henry Cejudo. So which three fighters would you like to see those three fight? I think I can guess who you want Henry Cejudo to fight.
Yeah, I'd like to get my hands on Henry. I mean, to be honest, he called me out. I answered. I mean, I first answered with action and then voice things. I didn't say anything when he called me out because I wasn't necessarily in a position to do so, but I am on a two-fight win streak, undefeated for three years.
Right.
a big layoff helped out in that. But, sure. I'd like to see that with Henry. I'd also like to see a Frankie fight with Henry. That'd be cool. For Dominic Cruz, you know, I think Dominic Cruz needs to school some of these young guys. Aljamain Sterling was just talking about how could I fathom going up and fighting Henry when I lost to Frankie Rivera or Jimmy Rivera, whatever his name is, by ankle kicks, and he beat him, and I'm like, dude, Marlon knocked you out. Then Henry just got a massive win over him. You know, the MMA math doesn't stack up. So Dominic Cruz is a great matchup against Aljamain. Aljamain's stand-up is still not where it needs to be. Dominic is a great wrestler and super elusive. I think an Aljamain Dominic Cruz fight would be good. And then for TJ, I'd like them to fight a lie detector test because that guy's a pathological liar. And get the real story of what he's been doing over these years. This, you know, that'd be the fight for him.
That'll be a few years away though. So after his suspension, but a name no one's really throwing around is Peter Yan still out there. I know he wants to fight Aljamain possibly for an inch. If Henry goes back down to fight Joseph Benavidez, your former teammate, Peter Yan has been calling for an interim title fight against Aljamain Sterling. What do you think of another interim belt possibly being added to the bantamweight division? Where do you think his path lies if this situation that you've laid out goes down?
Peter Yan, man, he's a savage. Great boxing. I think his biggest attribute is he's had years and years and years of combat in boxing, but that can also add up. You know, those guys that have had years of boxing experience, they also the chins go quicker. They're harder to hit because they're so accustomed to battle. So it takes a good guy to really land one on an experienced guy like that. I'm still curious to see how he's grappling. I think him and Aljamain, with a grappling exchange, Aljamain has got to have a massive advantage, and Peter Yan has a massive advantage on the feet, I would say. So, and as far as athleticism goes, you know, I'd lean towards Aljamain. As far as just being a gritty fighter, I'd say Yan. So that's an interesting matchup, but that guy's not going anywhere. He's still young in the sport. He's got plenty of time. You know, I can see in the future a fight against Song Yadong and Peter Yan. Song is also a savage with his hands, and he's a big fighter for the weight class, and his athleticism and skill set is unbelievable. People don't have him in the rankings, aren't talking much about him right now, but believe me, that Song Yadong is going to be a force in this weight class, and you've seen it. He's got 4 fights in the UFC, 3 $50,000 bonuses, massive knockout power, and people haven't even seen his grappling yet. His grappling is high level. So, you know, no one's calling out Song Yadong, that's for sure. I haven't heard one person call him out, and that's wise. Be smart, my friends.
Right. And we spoke to him backstage at UFC 239, and he said that you call him the future champion all the time in training camp. Those are his words. And they reminded me of – you said the same thing about TJ, and you said the same thing about Cody Garbrandt, and they both became champions. So where does Song Yadong compare to those two when they were at this stage?
You know, as the sport goes on, you're getting younger and younger guys that are more, you know, well-rounded in mixed martial arts. So, you know, I'm still calling out Cody as the champion. Cody he's just got to have a good night, a good camp, and stay healthy and decide that he wants to go right now. And that's completely up to him. So, you know, you got to see Song and Cody. They each need to take a break after going with each other. It's nasty. But as far as skill set goes, Song is 22. He is a kid that basically has gone wherever he can trying to get an advantage in his training. He'd go and save his money and go to Singapore and go to a seminar. He'd go to, you know, he came to us when he was maybe 3 years ago, came to our Train with Tam program, just showed up, didn't speak any English and spent time with us and got a feel for, okay, like where he needed to be, left, came back. But his history is he's been a lifetime mixed martial artist. So he was in one of those big schools where, you know, he had to ask his parents, I think probably had to pay for him to be in an eight-hour-a-day, like, training facility where they line up all the kids and they have them do katas and all that and they spar all day and all this stuff. That was when he was 10, 11 years old. I mean, he's a lifetime martial artist, and he's really good at all aspects of it. So, I told TJ the same thing, and I told Cody the same thing. And, I mean, I call it how I see it. If I see other champions, there's a kid in our gym, Kaleo Romero, He works harder than anyone, man. I have to kick him out of the gym. He's 4-1 right now. He's a guy that's really got some great potential. And we got another guy, Alexander Munoz, that he beat Nick Newell on the Contender Series. He's another guy that's in that. But you know, I take these guys that already know that they're champions in their mindset, and I reinforce it by saying I see the same thing, man. And me and Cody had some great talks when I just said, bro, you got the best. You know, when he first came, I'm like, man, your hands have got to be the best in the division right now. Like right when he first started, you know, he's been working with his uncle Bob since he was a little kid, and he's, you know, been perfecting the power and all that kind of stuff. But Song is a dangerous guy, and yeah, I tell him he's a champion because he needs to believe that and he needs to be thinking that, along with anyone else that's in this sport.
How much do you have to pull the reins back on these young fighters? Because you said you've had to tell people to go away. Is overtraining or like a legitimate thing you have to talk to these guys this early in the career? Because I imagine them being so young, they don't feel the aches and pains from the grinds over the years. So, yeah, how much do you have to pull them back when they're that young?
A lot. And I remember, first off, and I tell this story to the team all the time, when Song was coming out, I think it was probably his second or third time coming out, and he was in every single practice. And we offer a lot at our gym. It's like a university. So you could get there at 7 a.m. and go with Slava Borshov, who's a world champion kickboxer. Then you can do a drill session with myself, Lee Kemp, and Michael Malott at 7:45. Then you have practice at 9:30. Then you have a midday session of some sort of striking, boxing, or Muay Thai. Then you have jiu-jitsu at night. And so, guys, you have to make shift a schedule for them. You don't want every person in every single practice. You got to say, okay, what do they need to work on? Everybody's different. Some guys need to get stronger. Some guys need to get in better shape. Some guys need better jiu-jitsu, boxing, everything else. So Song was doing everything. And I told his wife, Daisy, I said, she was translating for me. I said, hey, you need to tell Song that he shouldn't be doing all these practices. He needs to, like, rest some. And Song, she told him, and his response was, well, he doesn't want to miss the practice because he feels like he's learning too much.
Oh, wow.
That he doesn't want to miss anything. And so I respect that, and that's why he's where he is now, you know. But at this point, I mean, he'll get in and he'll see a boxer that's a high-level boxer that's trained for boxing, and he'll go extra rounds with that guy and get his sparring in and do. And so that's what I've had to calm down. I had to explain to these guys, this is prize fighting. The thing that you're selling is your body and your brain. You know, you don't want to give that away for free. You have to watch your brain and practice. You have to learn skills to make sure you're mitigating damage and you're not getting your beat up on. And so that's the biggest thing, is reminding these guys not to kill each other in practice. And that's a daily thing, because, you know, pride, ego, tempers escalate and it can be dangerous in there, especially if you're doing it for years and years and years before you even get your real big opportunity.
Right. And we're going to jump over to Twitter, because we have a lot of questions, mostly about you and Henry. So we'll save those for the very end, so you have more time. But Yakamoto, I apologize if I mispronounced that, Yule. Do you reckon Korean Zombie can get a title shot soon? He looks pretty good. Now that he's finished his military service. So, yeah, Korean Zombie coming off another knockout win over Hinata Moikano. The featherweight division is obviously stacked, especially after this big fight on Saturday with Max and Frankie. But he was scheduled to fight Frankie before. He did lose to Yair, but on my scorecard, he was winning that fight. And if he had survived that last second, he probably would have got a unanimous decision. So where would you like to see the Korean Zombie go from here, and what do you make of your former division, the featherweight division, has all of a sudden a lot of activity at the top of the 145 pound weight class?
Yeah, I think Korean Zombie's right there. A couple of good wins. It's almost like a Poirier situation where he's, you know, Poirier had the loss to Notorious McGregor.
Yeah.
And just kept grinding. And I know that Korean Zombie's the same kind of guy. He's a grinder. He's somebody that literally loves this sport so much, you can't keep him away from it. He actually came out and trained with us a little bit back in the day also. I've got a great video on my YouTube channel of me interviewing him, teaching him some English. pickup lines, which was really funny. But you know, he's a stud, man, and he's such a talented guy. He's just a, you know, a couple good wins away, like a lot of guys, like an Andre Feely kind of guy, where they're continuing to get better. They're continuing to love the sport. They're continuing to work hard, and it can pay off or it cannot. So he's right there. I think he just needs to keep doing his thing. And Andre Feely is another one of those guys that has been right there. He had a great fight with Max Holloway back in the day, and Max caught him with a body shot and then ended with a choke. But he was doing really well against Max, and so he's got a resurgence and a refocus that is going to see him in the title mix here soon. And people aren't giving him credit, but it's hard to see a guy that's knocking out, you know, that caliber of guys that he's fighting and not get the recognition eventually.
Well, we spoke to him after his win at UFC Phoenix, and he said by the end of 2019, I'll be the 145-pound champion. It might not happen because 2019, I think the 145-pound division, there's a lot of stuff that might – not because he can't do it, but because there's a lot of fights that have to happen. But when does he want to get back in? I know he had a really impressive win, but he wasn't in the octagon that long for that victory. When is Andre hoping to get back? Like, obviously, I think when people say Team Alpha Male, they're expecting a lot of you guys of that San Francisco card just because it's NorCal. But does he have a timetable for when he wants to fight again?
Yeah, he wants to be on that San Francisco card. And, you know, Feely is a, you know, we do our end of the year banquet each year and give away awards to the guys and everything. And, you know, Josh Emmett was the first ever, you know, to get the award. We have this big wood club where he, you know, walks quietly but carries a big stick.
Sure.
That kind of guy. And Feely is like a manifester of big things. You know, he's where he comes from and where he's at now, where he wants to be and where he's going to be is just exciting for him and exciting for everyone around him. He, you know, he visualizes, he speaks about it, he verbalizes, he wants to be a world champion. He wants to do a lot of big things, you know, with his clothing line, with his music, with everything else. But first thing is getting that strap. So, you know, he just wants to keep lining them up and knocking them down until, you know, people can't deny him. And so getting back in there is the next step. That's when is the date on the San Francisco card?
I'm not 100%, but I think it's fourth quarter 2019.
Yeah. So that's coming. And that's where he's got his eye. Same with Benito Lopez. He wants the same thing.
Well, I know when I spoke to Andre Feely in Arizona, he wants to fight Max on an eventual UFC Hawaii card because obviously Max represents Hawaii more than anyone else, and Andre Feely also has ties. So he said, me versus Max Holloway sounds like a good main event for UFC Hawaii, and I can't say I disagree.
yeah, that'd be a great one, man. And they have a little history before. You know, it's funny. Michael Nakagawa is a former teammate of ours and a good friend to our team. He trains with Max Holloway now also, and he was training with Max, and Max was talking about coming out, I think, before he was even in the UFC to train with us. And he caught Feely with the guillotine, which I know Nakagawa knew very well. And so I'm curious if there is, you know, Nakagawa showed him the series that they ended up getting one of our guys, but they've got a history. I'd love to see that fight again, and Hawaii would be amazing. I'll be there for sure. That would be fun.
And that San Francisco card, I believe, is October 12th. So it's coming up. But we got one or two more questions then. We're getting a lot of questions about you and Henry, so I'll ask one or two more. But what do you think RDA should do next? Clearly, he can hold his ground in the welterweight, but there are a lot of big wrestlers in the weight class. I believe he has more to offer at lightweight. So Rafael Dos Anjos came up short to Leon Edwards in the main event of UFC San Antonio. But if you look at his record, the last few people that beat him were Colby Covington, who then went on to win the interim champion, Kamaru Usman, who's now the reigning champion, and now Leon Edwards, who hasn't lost since his loss to Leon, to his first fight against Kamaru Usman. So what do you think of Rafael Dos Anjos' future? And I know a lot of people, him specifically, would like to see a 165-pound division, because he thinks that would fit his body way more. Because he might have passed out cutting weight before his fight against Eddie Alvarez. And then 170, you see, he might be too small. So where would you like to see Rafael Dos Anjos go from here? And do you think there should be a 165-pound division?
I'd love to see a lot more weight classes. You know, 135 and 145 is a big stretch for me too. A 40 pound weight class would be perfect, or, you know, somewhere in there. But at the end of the day, the UFC knows what they're doing, and they have reasons why they do things. Most of the reasons are around business and creating a whole nother division. What does that do to their current model? Who knows? But yeah, that's a big difference. 155 to 170, that's 15 pounds. I would love to see more weight classes. I know that Sage was interested in a 165 pound weight class, and there's a lot of guys that could probably, you know, do well with a 165 pound weight class. But at the end of the day, you know, it would probably take someone like Connor,
right,
forcing it to happen. And I don't really think there's anyone in that position, other than Connor right now, that could, like, hold the UFC by the, you know, their ass to the fire and say, hey, let's do this another division. So unless it makes dollars, it doesn't make sense. So that's probably the answer.
And I spoke to Luke Rockhold and Chris Weidman, and they actually want a 195-pound division. Not a lot of people talk about that, because they said similar 185 to 205 is a huge jump. So I know they really want 195.
Yeah, and, you know, it makes sense. That's a big, big jump. Absolutely. And even from 205 to heavyweight, that's
right.
205 to 265.
Right.
You know, and then guys are dropping from 300 to get to 265, and then some guys are, you know, 220. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that you could do in that regard. And Luke, man, Luke is such a talented guy. I've had a chance to talk to him after his fight. It's unfortunate, like in this sport, the way it's like the school of hard knocks, you know. Guys can swing in one direction or another one, be on top of the world, then be in the dumps. And you know, I think Luke is another guy that is going to have a resurgence, and you're going to see a lot of things from him still. And it's always crappy to see people counting guys out because of going out and fighting like a warrior and being on the bad side of the truth of the sport, which is anybody's day, man, with the right punch. So I'm looking forward to seeing Luke come back and prove the naysayers wrong and get back on track.
What did you think of Dana White saying he'd rather see Luke Rockhold retire?
Well, Dana is I mean, he speaks from the heart, and when you see guys get knocked out, you don't know the back end of it. You don't know what their camp was like. You don't know. I mean, one move the opposite way, Rockhold has the ability to put guys out. Also, Rockhold could have knocked him out, and then Dana might want to see him for a title fight. So
right.
Dana's talking as a guy that is like trying to protect himself and on the front of not getting guys hurt. He also told me that he thought Sage Northcutt, after his loss,
should
retire, you know, and he said that publicly. But at the end of the day, Sage went and fought at 185 pounds when he was a 55 pounder in the UFC for most of his career, and because he thought that no one was cutting weight, and he fought against a world champion Muay Thai fighter, his first time in a ring, massive layoff with a bunch of injuries, and he didn't see his best performance. Now, is it fair for Dana to say, hey, he should retire? Yeah, it's fair, because he made a valid point. He said Sage could do a lot of things. He's a smart kid. He's a good looking guy. He's got some fame. He can capitalize on that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it doesn't take away from the fighting spirit or the fact that you don't know the whole story of what went into that. I mean, put Sage back at 165-pound weight class without injuries and proper training, he's a world champ. So, you know, Dana doesn't know everything.
What was Sage's reaction when he heard Dana White say he wanted to retire? I can't imagine, like, when we, from the outside looking in, Sage is always a positive, happy person. But when he hears his old boss say he should probably retire, how did he take that?
He said, oh, man, heck no. Heck no.
It checks out. All right. We have a question for you specifically on Twitter. So I'll preface this by saying this person is is ranking TJ the greatest bantamweight ever in the eyes of in his mind. If Uriah is able to fight for the title and win, does he surpass TJ in the bantamweight GOAT discussion? In my opinion, most definitely.
Oh, say one more time. That just read the exact thing.
He says, if Uriah is able to fight for the bantamweight title and win, does he surpass TJ Dillashaw in the bantamweight GOAT discussion? In my opinion, most definitely. So this person is basically asking, if you win the bantamweight title, do you surpass TJ Dillashaw as the greatest bantamweight who's ever lived?
Who cares? I don't care. I mean, I was surprised they put me in the Hall of Fame, right? You know, when you're fighting, you don't stop and see how you rank in the history of this or that, especially when the history is so small. And Dominic Cruz could be in that conversation. You know, Cody comes back and gets a win. Cody comes back and beats Henry or whoever's got the belt that time. He's in that conversation. TJ could be in that conversation unless you know, count the cheating stuff against him. But I don't think people tend to do that because a lot of guys that have been in the best, you know, pound for pound list have been caught for cheating, unfortunately.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't really care. That'd be cool. I plan on getting that fight with Henry and I think it's a great matchup for me. So, you know, we'll have to cross that bridge when we get there and I probably won't cross that bridge until maybe 70 when I want to go back and relive the glory days.
So then you said it. So there's a lot of questions asking about you and Henry Cejudo and the trash talk on Twitter and the call outs and everything. So I'll just put it out there. What's going on with you and Henry Cejudo? Is that the fight you're trying to get? Has you heard? I know you said you haven't spoken to Dana, but is there any interest from the UFC? What's going on with you and Henry?
Well, Henry called me out. The conversation Dana said afterwards, I didn't hear it, but somebody said that Dana said Uriah's old, which age is very personal thing compared to how you live your life, etc. I'm a young guy, absolutely. And so I didn't say anything in response. I just went out there and I won my fight against a 26-year-old. By doing that, I took his age, so I'm now 26. Or for those that want to argue that, I'll do the halfway. I'm halfway between 40 and 26. You do the math. So age is no longer a factor. I think it's a good matchup for me, you know, and I don't have to fight. I mean, it's a great business. The margins in fighting are awesome. You know, the sport's always getting better. And of course, that's a big part of fighting is you get paid for it. And I love that aspect of it, but I don't have to fight. I could find a way to make a living outside, which I have and I'm okay with, but that being said, I want fights that matter, but I needed to get myself back in and show that I'm still the same guy before I sit and pick and choose. So that fight's a big fight, but really the big fight that people want to see is the TJ fight. I'm sure it's just the story behind it. I didn't want that fight for a long time because I just didn't want to deal with the drama. But at this point, I don't really have a relationship with anyone in TJ's circle at all. There's a time where I felt like I was kind of close with his family, and at this point, the guy just keeps lying about me. Just one little lie, which is that I kicked him off the team when he really just, you know, went off the team, and so that gets on my nerves. Stop lying about me. Those are the two fights that are the big fights for me.
So if they offered you a title fight or TJ, which one would you want?
Title fight. Absolutely. I really don't want to fight TJ. I mean, I really don't. I mean, especially, you know, odds are in his favor. He's like a scientist when it comes to, you know, what he puts in his body. I know that. I've heard, you know, whatever he's doing. I've heard about it for years and I've never really delved into it, but he's also younger than I am and he's been training his butt off, but I'll love a good fight the grit and the intensity and the focus and the backstory is good on that one. But I'd rather test myself for the best, a guy that's a fair competitor, a guy that's accomplished a lot in the sport, a guy that, you know, has done what a lot. I mean, no one has actually done what Henry's ever done. He's the youngest guy from America to get the gold medal. He beat some of the best fighters ever in Demetrius Johnson and TJ Dillashaw. He also has a win against Joseph Benavidez, who, in my opinion, is one of the uncrowned champions. That's a guy that I know for sure has never done any PEDs and has fought, you know, who knows who's been doing what throughout this time. So, you know, Henry's beat some very tough guys, and what an opportunity to go test yourself against a historic dude and vice versa. And that's why he's called me out.
Now, Aljamain Sterling has also said this, that he would have no issues. Like, say he was next for a title shot. He would have no issue if the UFC skipped over him to give Joseph Benavidez the next flyaway shot, and he would wait. Are you in that same boat where, say, the UFC wants to give you the next title shot, but they say after this Benavidez fight, you wouldn't have a problem with Joseph basically getting a shot at Henry first?
Hell no. Joseph's my boy, man. I mean, I've been with Joseph since the very beginning. He lives the warrior life. He's focused. He goes to bed early. He gets up early. He lives this life, and he's dedicated to it. And truthfully, look, I'm a guy that's trying to save the division also. I love the 125-pound division, and it was killing me that they're talking about taking that division out. I mean, especially with a guy like Demetrius Johnson, who is such a kind-hearted, fun guy, who's also can beat up everyone in the world at the head of it. I'd love to see the division stay. Now, that being said, you can't make Henry do something. He's the champ, the triple C.
Right.
Right? You don't get to tell him what to do. So I imagine he would have something to say about where he fights next. And if he wants to stay at 135, throw me in there. And Aljamain's MMA math is he's like a second grade level MMA math guy. When I saw his statement, I'm like, you need to step up to trigonomics. with MMA math, you can't do MMA math.
Right.
Cody beat Dominic. Dominic beat TJ. TJ beat this guy. Dodson beat TJ. You know, this person beat Dodson. Uriah beat this person. They beat that person. It's like, bro, that's MMA math. You don't know until you're standing in front of somebody, breathing their air, taking their punches, seeing their speed. That's how you know if you're going to beat somebody up. Don't do MMA math. Go back to elementary school with the 1 + 1 = 2. This is a complicated thing, the MMA math of mixed martial arts. And I'm a guy that likes to figure it out by fisticuffs.
Sure.
I'm an educated guy, but I'd rather figure it out by throwing down.
Well, we've hit literally every question. There's a lot, pretty much all the rest of them are about you and Henry. We're also running up on time. So if there's anything else you want to say or plug or call out, the floor is yours, Mr. Favorite.
No, you know, I'm just happy to see that there's excitement in the lighter weight divisions. I want to give credit to Demetrius Johnson that gets a bum rap. He's a guy that held it down for a long time. Give props to Henry for stepping up and you know, not being afraid to be himself, cringy. And I'm excited for all this stuff coming up, man. I'm excited for Cody to get back in the mix. I'm excited for Feely to manifest his dreams. And Josh Emmett. I mean, Josh Emmett's been knocking dudes out. It's getting nasty. And guy doesn't speak, right? He walks quietly, carries a big stick. I'm excited for all the energy that's going on with our team. Launched the clothing shop, alphamale.com. We want to go get some cool alpha male, alpha female stuff. And looking forward to performing again, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime you want to come on, you're more than welcome to come on. And with that, we are out of time. So this has been the A-Side Live Chat on MMAfighting.com. We've had more questions come in than any other episode that I've hosted. So this was a rousing success. But stick around on the YouTube page. I am in Edmonton right now for the fights, UFC 240 on Saturday. We're going to have The open workouts later today, Max, Frankie, Cyborg, Lee Spencer. We're all going to have all those. But next weekend, I don't know who the host is going to be, but same time next weekend for the A-side and for Jose, that's UFC Hall of Famer Uriah Faber. See you next week, guys.